All alone again. I'm here. I'm Javierless. What's up, y'all? My name is Elliot Lane. Welcome to today's episode of Cannabis Insider. Thrilled you are here with us. We have two amazing guests. Very excited. We're going to be speaking with Sherry Orlowitz from the CFCR. Love working with them. And we are also going to be chatting with Corey Azzolino, new CEO of Ease. Gary J, right off the bat with SNDL, man. Are you trying to give me palpitations over here? This is fun, man. I'm glad to be here with you guys. Drop your comments in the chat. Drop your questions in the chat. I'm going to need them today. I can talk for 30 minutes, y'all, but I'm not sure it's exactly what you want, which is why we have two amazing guests. But Gary J, SNDL, I've said it many times before. I'm a bullish Betty on them. I like Sundial or SNDL Sandal. I like them a lot. However, everything right now is going the way DC is going. So if they bought Village Farms, that would probably be what would need to happen to move the needle significantly. Something of that magnitude. Outside of that, we're all just waiting on what happens federally. At this point, what's going to happen between Schumer and McConnell? Is McConnell going to keep attacking cannabis in the media? He's already attacked it, I think, twice, calling out Schumer trying to push that through. Is Schumer going to bring it to the floor in another bill or in its own? We have an expert here in Sherry to maybe chat with us about what she's heard a little bit. But she does some really cool things federally. That being said, again, y'all, welcome in. Some cool things are happening. If you haven't checked out recently, benzinga.com/cannabis. Definitely want to check that out. We are finishing up earnings season. Fire and Flower, that's FFLWF, reported their earnings. They are trending up since their management change. If you all don't know them, Fire and Flower is a pretty massive retailer in Canada. I would say for a long time, they're considered the main competition to High Tide. Nova Cannabis is also another one I'd place in this basket. But that being said, overall, I thought their earnings are pretty good. Their adjusted EBITDA was up 50, some 53%, I think, quarter over quarter to negative 2.8 million. But their earnings are somewhere around 43 million Canadian dollars. They are also the ones who own the Hifyre data platform, which is what Cantor Fitzgerald uses to measure the Canadian market. So all that being said, Fire and Flower is a company that I watch pretty closely. And I think they're also actively and have been actively for a long time looking to expand into the US. So all that being said, their earnings were today. Check that out. High Tide is entering another side of the US cannabis market, HITI on the NASDAQ. They will be launching a cannabis seed business in the US here. They are a super cool company. I think they own some 4 or 5% of the brick and mortar market share in Canada overall, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for one company to own that much is a ton. So keep an eye on them. They've been mainly in the ancillary space in the US. That being said, them expanding to cannabis seeds isn't necessarily plant touching, but it does seem they're inching that way. Outside of that, cashless ATMs are shut down. I'd love to get your thoughts on that in the chat. If you know what a cashless ATM is, drop a one. If you don't, you want to learn more, drop a two. If you don't want to learn more, drop a three. All right. But what is a cashless ATM? All right. I'm going to tell you anyway. Basically, it's a way for people to use bank cards at dispensaries and that for them to show up like ATM withdrawals on their statements. This was expected to come down. Rustica looks like the seeds are for sale to US already. I didn't order any, but it looked like it was available. Site said stay on USA site. So it's already going. That's actually a good contribution. Thank you so much, Rustica. That being said, cashless ATMs, this affects most everybody with a brick and mortar. You can't do it anymore. Really quick before we get to Sherry, I'm going to wrap this up. Yeah, I know you guys don't want to hear me monologue for too long, but keep an eye on Wisconsin and New Hampshire over the next year or so on the legalization side. Wisconsin, to me, particularly interesting news. Their Department of Revenue requested that the state legalize marijuana simply for the tax revenue. I mean, that's just people thinking logically at this point. I think they said it bringing in around $165 million in tax revenue per year. So Wisconsin just looking to move forward. However, their gubernatorial election that happened this cycle, all of the candidates basically said they were against cannabis. So might be a little bit of an internal fight there. New Hampshire, Republican and Democratic state lawmakers are looking to collaborate and are looking to get something passed in 2023. Kansas is exploring the medical marijuana facilities in Missouri, looking to launch a successful medical cannabis program there. So a lot still happening on the state level, a lot to have positive sentiment for right now, even without SAFE, even without movement on the federal level, which is what we're all waiting for at this point. The longer we go, MSOS and MSOX just continues to take a hit every time they move up a little bit, simply because sentiment is negative, because there's no movement from Schumer and McConnell's measuring contest. So as they continue to measure, we'll see who measures the longest. All right, y'all. I'm all monologued out. There's plenty more I could go on about. One particular article of note, check out Pablo Zwanich's analysis of the Canadian licensed producers. He's very bullish on Village Farms, still bullish on Organigram, and it seems Tilray is actually maybe pushing its way into his bullish sentiment a little bit, but he's recommending Village Farms and Organigram. So two very strong stocks, very well-known in stocks in the industry, so keep an eye on that. All right, I've said I'm done like four times now. So with that being said, very excited. We have an awesome partnership with the CFCR for content. They were the ones who put together the panel with Representative Brian Mast. If you haven't seen that, that is on our YouTube. Check that out. Out of Florida, U.S. Representative Brian Mast. He's very active for cannabis for veterans. Great conversation. It's because of the CFCR. They are very well connected on the regulation side. We're going to talk about the scheduling in cannabis. We're going to talk about all of it right here. Stay with us. Our first guest, Sherry Orlowitz, Managing Director of the Cannabis Federal Council for Regulation. There she is. The coolest glasses this side of the Mississippi. Sherry, how are you? Welcome in.
I cannot let you get away with something you just said, that McConnell and Schumer were trying to measure who has the longest.
Is that a soundbite? Are you approving of a soundbite, or am I going to get scolded?
No, I just think it's an incredible statement that I'm going to hold on to.
Please do. I mean, is it anything else at this point? It really is just all political posturing. It's nothing more than toying with us and everybody watching this, you, me, our producer, Aaron Thomas, Ben Zinga, we're all hanging in the balance. We're all just waiting for them to literally do anything. But that being said, Sherry, I'm thrilled to have you with us. Can we just back up? We'll rewind. We'll reverse a second. Tell us how you got into cannabis, because you've been a mainstay since before I started in cannabis. So tell us about your journey.
Well, I think of all of the careers that I've had, the most applicable is I was a federal prosecutor. And during that beginning of cannabis, people had come up to me and asked me to join funds. This is back in 13, 14, businesses and so on. And the thought process did not happen. And then a woman came up to me and said, "Can you help my daughter to raise $5 to $7 million? Helping women to access capital is something I like to do." I said, yes, yes, guess what she wanted? She wanted me to write an application for Maryland's, at that time, medical market. I did. They won. They're called Grow West, and they're probably worth, you know, upwards of $500 million today. So good.
Wow. Did you get some shares?
In 3 weeks, my whole team worked their arse off, and no, we got no shares, but I guess we took care of a family for generations.
No, she's not part of the family anymore, Sherry. I'm cutting that off right here. But that is incredible. What a way to jump into the industry. And then from there, where did we go?
I watched and I invested. I spent about 3 years looking at various companies, trying to understand the landscape, trying to rationalize what was accurate, what wasn't, so much misinformation there, and then started investing in some very interesting companies. And I became very much aware, I guess from my days at Justice, that if we didn't have some representation working with the federal agencies, that the delay would continue and continue. And just as a matter of maybe interest, just as serendipity would have it, we met with the FDA today. And I have to say,
Drop it on us, Sherry. What'd you talk about with the FDA today?
I said, please, it's time to raise the gate to the United States agencies and let's get on it. No, I didn't say that at all. But in fact, I do think that they are very much engaged. They're very much, I predict CBD will be legitimized this year, whatever that means.
I have so many follow-up questions to that statement. Can I, but please continue yours. I'm going to hold on.
I'm just going to say something that I think is important. This is me, Sherry Orlowitz, speaking as my personal opinion and not as the chair of the board of the Council for Federal Cannabis Regulation. My personal opinion is not that of CFCRs.
That's totally love it. Thank you, Sherry. What does legitimizing CBD mean? Because right now there's CBD hemp. Obviously, CBD can come from marijuana and hemp, but is that going to be inclusive of rare cannabinoids? Is that going to be legitimizing the synthetic development of what we see on the hemp side? What is that going to entail, do you think? Or is it simply the hemp CBD testing regulations of that?
You know, I don't know that the FDA is capable of perpetuating the fallacy that CBD in cannabis that is less than 0.3% and CBD in cannabis that is higher. I don't see that continuing. I mean, CBD is a molecule, just a single molecule, and whether it is in high, as I call it, high THC or low THC product, it doesn't matter. It's the same molecule. And what I mean by legitimizing is coming to the point of giving guidance as to how CBD can be in products and levels, dose levels or levels of CBD. In the over-the-counter market, it's called total daily intake. In the medical world, it's called dose.
Great. So this conversation with the FDA, I'm assuming there was some discussions about scheduling and some discussions about what is their participation in a future cannabis industry and what their reaction will be to potential situations in a future cannabis industry. Sorry, go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, I think that's great. But let me say this much. The FDA to me has always been the gatekeeper. Until they say that CBD is safe, you cannot put it in products and it be federally legal. It cannot, you'd be surprised to know it cannot cross state lines. You cannot buy it on the internet federally legal. So I think it's time for the regulations to sort of catch up with the marketplace. And so I think the proliferation of CBD is going to be addressed by FDA. That's what I mean.
Fantastic. And you know what? I think we skipped over something very important here. Can you tell us about the CFCR, right? And a little bit more about the work you're doing there. And really, is there a boilerplate or an ethos that you can give us about the Council for Federal Cannabis Regulation?
It's very simple. We try to bring together stakeholders, which is defined as Congress, the Executive Office of the President, cannabis industry participants, and mainstream industry. That's our definition of stakeholders and regulators together to create a safe and accessible industry. Those are two words, safe and accessible. And in order to do that, we spend time with the federal agencies that are going to be regulating cannabis. The first agency up to bat is FDA. Once FDA says cannabis, CBD is safe, then CBD can be put into products. And that is what everybody's waiting for. No more than CBD. I can't tell you about the rest of the cannabinoid constituents. I can't tell you what FDA thinks about that, but I know that they're anxious to get some regulations rolling.
Fantastic. So are there other organizations working around specifically what you're doing?
No, we
I don't think so.
We are the sole organization that works with the federal regulatory agencies. And the reason for that is really need to have an organization such as CFCR, which is partly filled with government, former government leaders from HHS, FDA, DOJ, DEA. We have a bunch of feds, if you will, that understand how the federal government works and that understands how regulators work. And regulators are much more comfortable with people who know that they understand where they're coming from, what their responsibilities are, and are really trying to give accurate information both to the regulators and the stakeholders. And that's what we're trying to do.
You say accessibility. Safe, obviously, you need the regulations for this industry to be safe and you know, for us to move forward. Accessibility, I'm assuming there is a the term that, you know, one of the people that was a part of the CFCR panel we held a few months ago, Christine De La Rosa from the People's Ecosystem, she thinks the word social equity has been hijacked for this industry. But I'm assuming there's some work there in terms of making cannabis accessible for people to participate in. What are you doing around that?
Well, one of the things is not having overly burdensome regulations and having regulations that make sense and support accessibility. And where social equity is concerned, social equity people, folks that come from underserved and marginalized communities, they don't always have the bucks to be able to get, if you will, expensive pharmaceutical medicine. And we believe in CFCR that whole plant medicine should not necessarily, and I'm going to strike that, we believe at CFCR. Sherry thinks that whole plant medicine needs to be looked at differently and that it needs to be accessible to folks without a prescription.
I'm not sure many would disagree with you there, Sherry, whether it's you or CFCR. That being said, you know, kind of one last question here. There's been a lot of studies that have been highlighted recently across those in the news who pay attention to cannabis studies, but particularly like, say, you know, maybe there's a Fox News that highlights a survey that puts cannabis and alcohol in the same type of addiction. You know, there's positive surveys highlighted by, you know, maybe cannabis industry media outlets, but there's a lot of conflicting data coming out right now. And it seems that nobody, you know, we could believe this today and something could come out tomorrow. That's a completely different study about the safety of cannabis. What normalizes that? How do we get some of these, some of the science under control, you know, from our perspective? What should we trust right now? I mean, do you have any insights into that?
Okay, what we should trust. I'm not sure that anyone here is going to think they can trust the FDA, but I think that's something we can trust, if you will. I'm going to try to give you a little prediction here because I'm a little confused on the question, but that's my fault. I don't listen well all the time, but here's a prediction. I predict that cannabis will be rescheduled potentially by the end of the year, if not next year, and it will be rescheduled below it too. So there's a little prediction, and I could try one more time to answer your question. But I thought that might
help. I don't really want to race past that. That I think that answers my question plenty. So a lot of people feel that rescheduling at all is a win for the pharmaceutical industry. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't. I don't disagree or agree. Let me say that everything depends on how it plays out. And I think the industry, and that being cannabis participants, have a real opportunity to start exploring the value of cannabis beyond just adult use. And that's up to the varying participants of this industry. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the pharmaceutical track. Let's weigh in with some ideas of how to make cannabis accessible and not have to be a pharmaceutical. That's what we're trying to figure out at CFCR, among many other things. And it's critical. And that goes right to accessibility. And that's what we need. We need people to be able to access marijuana without breaking the bank.
Fantastic. Sherry Orlowitz, board chair, CFCR, fighting for safety, fighting for accessibility, fighting for the cannabis space. Very much appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for being here. Happy holidays to you. And looking forward to doing this again in the future. We'll have more content with you all coming, I believe, in early February. So everybody stay tuned for that.
Thank you, Elliot. Look forward to bringing you some breaking news then.
Let's do it, Sherry. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. Y'all, what'd you think? Awesome to chat with somebody who just got off a call with the FDA. And also just laid a prediction for us from Sherry herself. So very, very cool. If you're still watching, thank you for tuning in. We have one more amazing interview for you. Unless Aaron tells me otherwise, I believe we are good to go. I'm the CEO of Ease. If you don't know Ease, you're about to have some knowledge dropped on you. Corey Azzolino. Let's go right into it. Corey, how are you, sir?
Elliot, great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Awesome. Good to see you again, man. Welcome in. You know, I was just trying to think. I don't think we've ever had ease on, period. So this is thrilling in many ways because you have recently taken over one of the OG companies in the cannabis, the legal cannabis space. But let's talk about you for a second, then go into ease. How'd you get into cannabis, man? Tell us a little bit about your journey to ease.
My journey to ease is an interesting one, and it kind of mirrors the craziness of cannabis writ large. I started in cannabis back in 2017. I was part of the founding team of a company called Dionamed, which was an early California and Oregon distributor and house of brands. That company had kind of an interesting set of ups and downs. We were an early partner with Ease. We were public on the Canadian Securities Exchange, and then ultimately kind of fell victim to the first wave of lack of capital, which is, you know, for many companies, unfortunately, is still the current realm that we live in. Mm-hmm. The company actually was public on the CSE and then went through a receivership process at the end of 2019. At which point I was made the CEO and the company was sold to Ease. And that was at a point in time that was a pretty interesting time for Ease itself. Ease was started back in 2014 as a delivery marketplace. So kind of pure play technology, didn't touch the plant, just connected consumers who would go to ease.com with third-party licensed retailers. And in early 2020, the board had made the decision to actually go plant touching, start to acquire dispensaries, start to own inventory. And the acquisition of Dionamed was really the first step in that. So I helped facilitate that transaction, joined Ease, held a number of different roles within Ease over the past 3 years, and took over as CEO in September. And I'm really excited for the company where it's at right now. It's at a very interesting inflection point, and I really think that it's really on the precipice of the next leg up of growth for our business. But we're definitely a little bit different than a lot of the other MSOs out there, and we're still mm-hmm. a private company. But we look forward to in the years ahead to being a publicly traded company as well.
How are you looking? Ooh, Corey, just dropping that in like a little pin drop at the end. That's exciting. You can probably only say what you just said about it. But that being said, what's going to catalyze that growth into the future here?
Yeah. So for us, we kind of are a little bit different than a lot of the other MSOs in the public market, in that we're really coming from kind of competitive markets out. So just to give a very quick high level on Ease, you know, Ease, the brand, is very well known for delivery, but that's only part of the story. So Ease has 13 delivery locations in California, two of which are Delivery Plus Retail. We're actually the largest retailer in California by kind of sales volume. Wow. In Colorado, we have 17 locations. We're retail only in Colorado. That's under the Green Dragon banner.
Is this organic or unorganic?
That one in particular was via a merger. So we merged with Green Dragon at the beginning of 2022. And so that gave us not only our kind of existing business in Colorado, but also gave us the real growth engine, which is our Florida operation. So over the course of 2022, we've been hard at work operationalizing our Florida business. Where we stand today is we have 14 of our 37 locations actually open and operational. We have another 8 locations that are waiting on inspection. So we should be about 22 by the end of the year. And then we should have all 37 locations fully open by the end of the first half of 2023. So we're going from basically no locations to 37 locations in effectively under 12 months.
Wow.
And that's backed by the fact that we now have our as many of your listeners probably know, Florida is fully vertically integrated. So you have mm-hmm. to have really the supply side balanced with the demand side. And so our grow and our manufacturing facility is actually having its first harvest on January 15th. So we're really excited that we'll have, you know, kind of new fresh products being released in the market that should hopefully catalyze our growth, not only in 2023, but through 2024 and beyond.
A couple of follow-up questions for you and all the things that we just talked about. So let's start with Florida. So we've seen a lot of, I think, movement into Florida. It really seems like Florida is the market that people dream of, that they model after, that nobody really says bad things about Florida outside of the fact that they just won't, you know, legalize adult use. But that at least put it on the bill quite yet, but on the ballot quite yet. But that being said, you have you have cookies, you have Sunburn Cannabis, you have companies moving their headquarters to Florida, like Flora Growth, like Air Wellness. What is it about Florida that just it's the hot girl or guy that we all just want to be with right now?
Yeah, Florida has mostly positives. I would say that the only negative, and I think this will help set the context, is that it's extremely expensive to start operating and it's extremely expensive to enter the market. Mm-hmm. So licenses have historically traded for north of $25 million. And that just gets you the paper license. And because it's vertically integrated by requirement, you have to then build the grow as well, which, you know, for us, we're, you know, almost $30 million into building a grow as well. And so there's just a lot of capital intensity that requires, you know, especially in today's day and age, it's just really, really challenging to find the equity capital to actually go and build out those types of facilities. Mm-hmm. But now on the positive side of the ledger, so that's kind of the negatives, is how capital intensive and how restrictive it is. On the positive side, in terms of actual patient access, which is something Sherry was just talking about, the benefits are that you can basically open as many locations as you want. And that's really unique across the U.S. So in California, we have 13 locations. We have another 3 locations we've been trying to open for multiple years, but the permitting and regulations just make the time by which you can actually execute and open stores very, very lengthy. In Colorado, they basically are issuing no additional retail licenses, so your only way to expand your footprint is via acquisition. And then if you look at markets like Massachusetts or New York, there's actual caps on the number of licenses you can have. So what's interesting about about Florida, I should say, and why we were particularly attracted, even though we are a very late mover, right? There are plenty of established companies, many of which you just named. There's also, you know, Curaleaf and GTI and, mm-hmm. and Cresco, right? There's all of the major MSOs. The reason why we're still excited, even though we're kind of a late mover, is that by being a late mover, we could set up our cost structure a little bit differently. We're coming from very competitive markets, so we know that ultimately, the thing that attracts consumers and helps win customers is low prices. It's, you know, quality products at low prices. It's, you know, not a rocket science formula. And so what we've been able to do, though, is because a lot of the early movers were taking legacy infrastructure from, you know, legacy greenhouses and things like that, converting them, we were able to kind of start from a blank sheet and really match up what we consider kind of, you know, very low cost, very value-driven prices with the infrastructure to actually support that. And so that's where we're, you know, still very focused on. There's been a lot of, I think, attention on discount wars and things like that. But when you look at the average selling price in Florida relative to Colorado or California, where we operate profitably, it's still much, much higher. Mm-hmm. And then when you factor in that, you know, 100% of your products are manufactured and sold by yourself, that means that the margin profile of Florida is very attractive. And just looking at the population overall relative to the number of dispensaries currently, there's, you know, 450 dispensaries currently in Florida. I think once rec comes, that should be at, you know, 2,000 to 3,000.
Right.
And people said the same thing about California. People still say the same thing about California, yet we're stuck at the 1,000 dispensaries because of the fact that it's so difficult to open new locations.
Right.
And when you compare that 450 number in Florida relative to a, you know, 22 million ish population, in Colorado we have, you know, 1,000 dispensaries for, you know, 4.5 million people. So I still think there's a long way to go on the retail slope and curve. We're hopeful that in Florida we get a adult use initiative on the ballot in 2024. Trulieve's obviously making a big push on that,
right?
Because ultimately it comes back down to the question of access. How can we get more cannabis consumers, you know, able to easily buy product where they don't have to go see a doctor, and they can consume for, you know, their own, whatever their own needs are, whether that's for just recreation or salt.
You know, who said the exact same thing on this show a while back, almost to the T, is Dr. Sean Demasius from Alera Holistic Healthcare. It's all about access and just creates more access for cannabis. Super cool. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. You mentioned that you have experience with receivership. I've had a lot of people I've spoken to that have reached out to me that work in receivership. that are looking at cannabis right now as an industry that they may look to take on, unfortunately. So that being said, in 2023, are you seeing 2023 as, do you see cannabis having a lot more news about receivership? Is that something that you can speak to given your experience with it? I just thought I might ask the question in terms of health of companies from your personal experience.
Yeah, I think that, listen, anytime capital markets get strained, this is an incredibly capital intensive industry. There are, you know, I think there are hidden costs, you know, throughout the value chain, whether you're a cultivator mm-hmm. Or you're a retailer, whether that's, you know, security costs to break-ins and robberies. There's just, you know, so many hidden expenses throughout the value chain. And so what that lends itself to is, you know, companies that need a little bit more capital, and there's just no capital at all in the industry, which will naturally lead itself to you know, things like receiverships. Mm-hmm. I think in California in particular, you know, the retail sales, at least from our experience, have been relatively steady. We don't have any cultivation or production in California. And so just using it as a kind of mature market, you know, proxy, you know, I think where you see a lot of struggles are on the, you know, cultivation, manufacturing, and just building out too much capacity for what the market ultimately needs. And, you know, I think Michigan will, you know, kind of follow a similar trajectory, another competitive market where, you know, there was a lot of capital that flowed in that things may have been overbuilt. So I think that definitely in cultivation and production assets, you will start to see receiverships because there are hard assets there. There is certainly value, but things were just overbuilt with, mm-hmm. you know, kind of sky high projections that unfortunately need to kind of come back down to earth. And so, you know, receivership is a painful process, certainly for any equity holders, but it does mean that, you know, some of those kind of hard assets will live to fight another day. And ultimately, when we went through receivership, what we kind of sold on the other side were, you know, the dispensary assets, and we were able to, you know, cleanse some of the historical liabilities through the process. So right. It's a painful process for investors. Certainly think there'll be more of it coming just by virtue of limited capital flowing into the industry.
Well, thank you for answering that. You didn't have to, but I definitely wanted to use your experience there. So the last couple of questions here for me, you know, Ease had Ease Momentum, which I think was one of the more respected, one of the more well-known accelerators, you know, I believe for social equity applicants in the industry, you know, being an MSO and moving into different states as a plant-touching operator, there aren't many doing that type of work mm-hmm. on that side. You know, with your transition into CEO here, how is it important to you? What are you still doing through Ease Momentum? Because I think there's been some change there, if I'm not mistaken. What's Ease doing with that?
Yeah, so we completed three classes of Ease Momentum. Ease was a grant program where Ease granted 10 social equity entrepreneurs, $50,000. And it was kind of modeled after you know, technology accelerators like a Y Combinator mm-hmm. or like a Techstars. However, the difference being that it was purely a grant. And so, yeah, Ease's mission statement is deliver good with the goods. So programs like Momentum were extremely important to our employee base, our customers, and is something that is extremely important to me personally as well. We are still working with the founders of that program. So Jen Lujan and Ishak are the two founders of the program. And in order to continue to expand the program beyond just the kind of four walls of Ease, they are running with the program independently now. Okay. However, Ease is still a financial sponsor and backer. And with if you look on, you know, ease.com menu, you'll see specific categories with social equity brands and that is something that we will continue on and expand to multiple states. And with that program comes preferred terms. So we give those brands, you know, we buy at higher wholesale prices, we give them, wow. pay them faster. So there's a lot of financial incentives to be a part of that program such that it wasn't just a transactional relationship where we were just granting money, but we were trying to help support the businesses for the long term. And that's something that we were very excited to continue on with.
How many brands, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now, I think we probably have 12 social equity brands
right.
on the carousel and probably 100 of our 700 SKUs.
Okay, fantastic. That's helpful. Thank you. Last for me, man. I've kept you long enough. Thank you for your time. But I got a great prediction from Sherry, man. You have any federal predictions for me? You got any?
I was going to push on Sherry to ask if she was talking end of year 2022, as in the next 17 days, because that would be wonderful. I think that the Biden news of rescheduling and pardoning at the federal level was a welcome surprise. Mm-hmm. I personally, was getting fairly nervous with safe banking not passing, just making that a sign of the larger kind of malaise at the federal level. So I think with the what I've said with the rescheduling, I believe it will be schedule two or schedule three or lower as well. I the interplay with the FDA, I think, is something that I don't fully understand. To be quite transparent, in that the cat is so far out of the bag. Yeah. That
Sherry can wear that hat for me.
Yeah, I don't understand how they could ever put the state led programs kind of, adult use, that like that's not coming back in the bottle. That genie is well out of the bottle. Mm-hmm. So although I think that like if you are making medical claims, that of course would need to run through the FDA approval process, I think that they will have to do some degree of carve out for recreational cannabis. So I think that's been the kind of point of fear about the FDA being involved, is well, how does that affect recreational programs? And I would have to assume that they'll carve that out just merely out of from a practical standpoint. And the programs will continue on as they're currently running. But I do expect that by the end of 2024, we will see, some movement to get that to schedule three or lower. The impact on 280E is a massive one that can't be overstated. But I would also say that it's often reported that, safe banking will have less of an impact on MSOs. That's certainly true, but and we have banking federally, but there are still a lot of hidden costs, like I said, where from cash handling to ATM pickups and just security concerns. As frustrating as it is to say, we probably experience a robbery. We've got 45 locations across the country that are open. We probably receive some degree of robbery once a month, that's reflective of having lots of cash at locations, and we have security guards at all of our locations. So, it is without a doubt, although it is, even more impactful and more helpful to smaller businesses, it still will have a meaningful impact on, the larger MSOs. So we certainly hope that gets pushed over the finish line here by the end of the year or next year, if it has to stand alone on its own two feet. But safe banking, I hope will come, and certainly hope that cannabis will be rescheduled by 2024.
Awesome, my friend. Corey Azzolino. I said that right. Azzolino?
Nailed it.
Awesome. Corey Azzolino, CEO of Ease, new to the role, not new to the industry, not new to the company. Thrilled to have you with us. Honestly, you're taking Ease to the next level, my friend, and thrilled to watch you do it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. We'll see you soon, man. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. That is it. That is Cannabis Insider for the day. As always, subscribe. Benzinga Cannabis Daily Newsletter. Drop that in your Google search bar. Hit that link. Drop your email in. Every morning, you're going to receive the best cannabis education possible. Listen to this. Share this with your friends. Every Tuesday, Thursday, we are live 4 Eastern time right here, Benzinga YouTube. You can also listen to it on Apple, Spotify, and also 3 to 5 minutes every morning, Cannabis Daily, of what's happening in cannabis every single morning. That's it from me, Russell Kale, Gary J. Hope you guys are still with us. Thank you all for listening. That's it. We'll see you Thursday. Peace out.